Blog Talk Radio.
Finally, allow your awareness to move upward to the top of your head. This is the crown chakra or Sahasrara, meaning the thousand petal lotus flower. Breathe in the golden light of the thousand petal lotus and feel your oneness with all of creation. This chakra relates to unbounded awareness, beyond time, beyond space and causality. This is the seat of divine consciousness, where the sphere, the process of seeing, and the scenery merge. You are the lover, the process of loving, and the beloved. When this chakra is open and balanced, you will feel clarity in thought and purpose. Your personal intentions and desires are in alignment with cosmic will. As you continue to breathe in the color gold, be aware of the infinite silence. The mantra for the thousand petal lotus chakra is Om. 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 Breathe in and silently repeat the mantra.
Peace, family. This is Monique Olivia Sunshine with the continuation of our crown chakra as we continue to learn about our seven chakras, our basic seven chakras. And we are continuing the crown chakra, which is what we spoke last week. I'm also going to begin first off with a disclaimer because, as always, we want to make sure that we understand if anyone gets disconnected that the show is not completed. So if I get disconnected or if you get disconnected, the show is going to continue for an hour. I know initially it says 2 hours, but I'm actually cutting it a little short today just because I have other events and things that are happening. But, I mean, if we can go a little longer than an hour, then I will push for it. But if we do get disconnected, please do not hang up, and the show will continue unless I post something in the page explaining what's going on. So as we left off with the crown chakra from last week, I'm just going to go in review of what we talked about with our crown chakra. And our crown chakra, which is our seventh chakra, is the realm of higher brain function, okay? It is our higher self and who we are as spiritual beings and our true essential self, basically, that we connect to through our connection with our spirituality. And so, again, it is associated with divinity, enlightenment, guidance, harmony, higher self, knowing, life force energy, and oneness with the universe, spirituality, and wisdom. Again, the colors that are associated with the crown chakra is white light, or gold, violet, or purple. And its location is at the top of the head. I did mention some crystals, and I actually posted them to the page. I'm just going to name a few that are the most popular. Amethyst, which is one. Clear quartz, gold, Herkimer diamond, moonstone, opal, selenite, which is a great, great one I advise people to get. And in Sanskrit terms, it's called Saraswara, and it just basically means in Sanskrit terms that I am one. So the seventh chakra is considered the highest chakra because it's the top three of the major spiritual chakras. And the element that it is affiliated with, I know last week I said it's no real element, but actually it's the element of thought and cosmic energy. Okay, so we did talk about the blockages, and typically with our crown chakra, it really is about, like I said, our essential self and who we are. And those questions that we have about ourselves, like what is our purpose, why are we here, and it all affiliates around that. It is our spiritual link to the divine and the universe. It encompasses our connection with our own spirituality and the universal spirit that is beyond us. As I talked about last week, our religious connection and what we believe in religiously opens those gateways into our higher self. And it is my belief, as I was raised in Christianity, that had I not been raised in Christianity, I probably would know or would be in a place of seeking a higher me if I didn't have that portal opened for me. And so sometimes we have to go through the rain in order to get to the sun. And it takes that journey, a journey through life for some of us to get to that place. Some of us have an innate sense of knowing and have those questions out the gate and don't have to seek into religion in order to find it. And it definitely wasn't my intention to seek it, but I was raised and brought into it and forced into it. And behind that developed questions about what is this and why is this this and why are they saying this. And once you start asking those questions, it's really your crown chakra that is being activated to bring you into a level of seeking something higher than what is in front of us. And although we all may not be on that same page, there are many of us who are asking questions, and as we ask and we're finding solutions out to this cosmic world around us and what it means and what it's all about. We also talked about how the crown chakra is affiliated with your ability to learn, so seeking higher education, and that is also goes in part of what I was saying with asking those questions and why is the sky blue and why does, you know, why do they say Jesus Christ is coming back? Those kinds of questions sparked us to seek higher education, to go to a higher place in order to find out what this is all about and what is our purpose here. So when we discover the big picture, again, we are working in our seventh chakra. I also mentioned that when you are sleeping, when you faint, and when you are in a coma, your seventh chakra closes. But you don't necessarily have to be sleep in order to be in an unconscious state. You have a lot of people who are walking around here sleepwalking, those who are not open to their crown chakra, those who are not connected to the seat of their soul, which is our crown chakra. And so when we talk about blockages, and I'm going to just go right back into it, as we mentioned before, the associated anatomy, again, is our skull, our brain, and our cerebral cortex, and also including our pineal gland, which we spoke of earlier. And the physical issues that are related to a blockage would be learning disabilities, nervous system failure, headaches, especially at the crown of the skull, autism, brain tumor, comas, amnesia, senility, or Alzheimer's disease. And so psychological blocks that are related to a feeling of isolation, depression, lack of inspiration, spiritual crisis, and typically the physical issues really call out the psychological issues. So where you have one, you tend to have another. So how we want to be able to awaken the crown chakra from a blockage, we want to be able to see beyond the limits of our ego, because typically our ego is what blocks us from being able to see clearly. And our ego is just something that when you know, that operates through our third chakra, which is our solar plexus. And the ego basically is can take over and actually disable you from being able to listen to your intuition. And so with the ego, there are three parts to standing the ego. And typically ego is just really when someone is so self-absorbed and their perception is focused on self. Everything is about self. You know, they distinguish everything from their point of view, and it is the self-esteem that is elevated, that is like on the opposite level of low self-esteem, is extremely high self-esteem, like egotistical, and that's where that word comes from, the ego. But it's like self-conceit or self-importance. This person is so important that nobody else's thoughts or ideas matter. A lot of times, many of us operate from that egotistical level and don't realize it, you know, especially when we want things our way and we're not open to compromise, we're not open to having compassion, we're not open to seeing things from a well-rounded view. And the beautiful thing about the crown chakra, once you get open to it and once you remove blockages from it, you start to step outside of yourself when you see others in a situation. And for instance, I made a statement earlier today about not taking things personally. When you're taking things personally, you're working on ego because you're assuming that everything is revolving around you and in your world. And so I'm just going to read a little something that comes from the Four Agreements that I had posted earlier today about not taking things personal. And this is how you try to learn how to not operate on ego. Nothing other people do is because of you. It is because of themselves. All people live in their own dream, in their own mind. They're in a completely different world from the one that we live in. When we take something personally, we make an assumption that they know what is in our world. We try to impose our world on their world. Even when a situation is so personal, even if a person insults you directly, it has nothing to do with you. What if they say, you know, or what they say or what they do and the opinions that they give according to the agreement they have in their own minds, they have created this in their own minds. Their point of view comes from all of the programming they have received during domestication, and I'll explain what domestication is in a minute. If someone gives you an opinion and says, hey, you look fat, don't take it personally, because the truth is that person is dealing with his or her own feelings and opinions. That person tries to send poison to you, and if you take it, then it becomes yours. So a lot of times when people say things to us, and typically most likely things that we don't like, if someone says something to us, and we work with that in our heads. We can't get it out of our heads. We're thinking about it all the time. We're like, why did they say that to me? And we're taking it personally. And what has occurred, and the reason why we question ourselves is because we already owned it. We took ownership of what that person said. So if someone told me that I was ugly and I took ownership of it, and I would be walking around saying, damn, you know, I don't like the way I look. All these little subconscious things start to come out because I've already agreed in my mind that this person was right. And a lot of that comes from self-esteem as well. It comes from that third chakra and having a blockage in that third chakra where you have low self-esteem and you allow someone else's ego to control you and further bring you deeper into that low self-esteem. So taking things personally makes you an easy prey for predators, the black magician. They can hook you easily with one opinion and feed you whatever poison that they want. Because you took it personally, you ate it up. You eat up all the emotional garbage, and now it becomes your garbage. And if you don't take it personally, then you are immune in the middle of hell. Immunity to poison in the middle of hell is the gift of this agreement. And that's from the Four Agreements. If you ever get that book, it is an awesome book to start from. I'm actually going to be doing a book read on the Four Agreements beginning in June, So it's going to be very powerful to start breaking that stuff down and start implementing it in your own life. I picked up that book in 2009, and it is my go-to book for almost everything. And I have learned to, in some cases, not to take everything personally. I think I operate more from the side of compassion now, because what I try to do is step outside myself and look at the person as a wounded individual, because all of us are wounded on some level. All of us have some sort of woundology from where we've grown up that we carry along with us. And so with that we carry along with us, we tend to project that wounded spirit or that wounded energy onto others. And so what then tends to happen is that we attack others, and we don't realize it because it's based on our own personal feelings of ourselves. You know, a lot of times we use our opinion, and I see in a lot of posts people, when someone posts something and there's a bunch of people got opinions about it, and then you have someone who might step outside the general opinion of what everybody's saying, and that person gets irritated. And that happened to me a lot. A lot of times I post things just for information, and then you have someone who gets up there and they have their own perception or their opinion about what they believe it to be. And sometimes it's really hard to kind of separate yourself from going after them, because you want to be able to make your point and have people understand the relevance of what you're saying, and you don't want anybody to taint that with a negative view. But then at the same time, folks are like, well, this is a public site. I can express my opinions and things like that. And they're right. They're right. So it's really, really hard to kind of combat that and kind of move yourself away from taking things personally or allowing people to express their opinions. A lot of times I try to be open-minded about it, and then other times I try to distance myself from owning someone else's opinion. Very hard to engage in a debate and not own someone else's perception, because you're debating on it. You have to build a response to it. So on some level, it does build a sort of a bridge to their thinking. So in awakening that crown chakra, we have to learn that every experience is a new experience. We have to learn how to not put our emotions and our feelings attached to it, because then we are allowing ourselves or allowing our egos to become a part of that situation. So all the activities that you want to do when you are awakening your crown chakra, you want to learn how to expand your mind a little bit more, by doing some activities that you to awaken by doing some questioning or questioning yourself, questioning what goes on with you. And there's some basic questions like, who is running this show, or who is this, who am I? Okay, what is driving all of this to happen in the universe? What is the nature of this energy, and what is God? You know, and what is my role here? And we want to ask ourselves those questions so we can have a better understanding on how to get clarity or how to get clear and unblock our crown chakra. We also want to do things like I mentioned before, meditation. There is a meditation that you can do when you kneel on the floor and you put your palms together in front of your chest in like a prayer position. And then you want to bow your head in supplication to an energy that is higher than yourself. You want to close your eyes and take long, slow, deep breaths and draw your attention to the crown of your head. And then you want to raise up your neck so that it is aligned with your spine, and you want to imagine what your seventh chakra looks like, and you want to breathe into your chakra. And as the recording had mentioned earlier, to chant Om or and you make that sound. So that's one way you can actually open. In aligning your crown chakra, you want to make sure it's properly aligned because you want to feel grounded and connected to others. Because sometimes what the issue is when we are so connected to our crown chakra, and this is another sign of a blockage in egotistical behavior, is when we want to seem holier than others, when we have this holier than thou complex. And you get that a lot in many people who are under religious groups, and they have this attitude that, you know, I'm better than you because I worship and I go to church on Sundays and I give to charities and I do this. That is the ego again. That is the ego, and that is that crown chakra being blocked, seeing yourself as better than others. And there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, being confident about yourself, but when you go above and beyond to make someone feel like they are worthless or that what they practice or what they believe in is wrong according to you, and what you believe in is absolute truth. And I would say 90% of people walk around with a blocked crown chakra or a misaligned crown chakra, where at times it may be open and at times it may be totally blocked, and this is where we have that back and forth with battling with spirituality. When you perceive unity in all things and yet appreciate your own individuality and the ability to gain knowledge and interpret information as your own personal growth, aligning your crown chakra is the final act of alignment, because you are already aligning your previous chakras. So your other chakras would be straight and opened and allowing free-flowing prana, which is the breath, or life force energy in order for you to gain ultimate balance. And then you can live in this world and you can also live beyond this world. So when you have all of your chakras aligned and you are opening the crown chakra, you are able to connect to what is going on here on earth, and you can connect to your higher power. You have that ability to turn, it's almost like a light switch where you could turn it off and on and have that balance between the universe and earth. And that is so important to have that, because you want to maintain that balance. You want to try to get your chakra properly aligned, and I will post some exercises on how to be able to do that. So now we're going to talk about an overage in your overactive crown chakra. And so, and I've been dying to get to this one because it speaks a lot, because some people may think that they don't have an overactive, but the psychological or the physical issues that are related to a seventh chakra overload is headaches at the crown of the skull, brain tumors, overactive nervous system, seizures, health problems related to poor hygiene and physical neglect. And then there's something else called savant syndrome, which I'm going to talk about in a little while. And then the psychological issues that are related to an overloaded self, seventh chakra, is obsession with or addiction to spiritual or intellectual practices, religious and spiritual delusions, hallucinations, nervous breakdowns, uncontrolled out-of-body experiences, disassociation with the body, over-intellectualizing, and feeling ungrounded, flighty or floaty, or not connected to earth. It's amazing how many people are in that area. And I'm just going to read a little bit more about it. When the crown chakra is too open and overloaded with energy, spiritual matters not only prevail, they push other matters off the radar. So you tend to be in your spiritual self all the time. This is where you have some people who kind of have abilities to be able to do astral travel and can't get out of travel mode, always in travel mode, always away from this earth, always the space cadet just gone. And so that's a tough place to be. I've known some people who actually have gone through that, and what they did was they actually secluded themselves from the world. They actually became a hermit and stayed in the house because they didn't know how to function in the outside world because they were always in the spiritual realm and they didn't know how to get out of that. And so I'm just going to read a little bit more about that because some of these may sound familiar to some of you people who are listening. These are people who get addicted to religious practices or are so overzealous that their spiritual pursuits that they forget to live in the world. Defined for monks and nuns who live in monasteries and hermits who live in caves that have devoted their lives in a singular pursuit of spirituality. And for the rest of us who have to live in the world, a sense of balance or more mundane aspects of life is essential for living. An overloaded seventh chakra tips the scale away from the real world, the body, and even other people in favor of a vision that is always and only looks upward. Now, I do want to say that as we talked about the sixth chakra and it being related to mental illness, this is also where mental illness can begin in your connection or your disconnection of being here on Earth. And this is where hallucinations come in, where you get psychic attacks and just all types of things that take you out of the body or take you out of this earth and disconnect it from here. And so mental illnesses can also come from this particular chakra if it is an overload and differentiating yourself between here and there. Sometimes it gets jumbled and it gets mixed up, and sometimes you have people who cannot come out of not being here. They're just there all the time, and that's a scary place to be. But an overloaded crown chakra can be more about obsessive devotion of learning and gaining knowledge at the expense of actual practical application and knowledge. People who have unusual intellectual abilities sometimes have an overload in these chakras. And you will find the most highly intelligent people that will tend to have this flighty sense of self in their they tend to have overloaded chakras. Crown chakras. So they have flightiness and not being here. And then typically you're highly intelligent people, and that is just amazing. And it doesn't seem far-fetched because you have people who are typically people who are highly intelligent. They seem to operate very unusually. They seem to be different, completely different than everybody else, and they tend to have just a whole different energetic language altogether. So it's very interesting, and I'm actually going to put some information about that too. But overloaded chakra health issues with people who have the overloaded crown chakra tend to have headaches at the crown and would have, instead of having like sinuses or forehead headaches, is usually at the very top or sharp pain. An overloaded seventh chakra sometimes can be reflected in a brain abnormality, especially one that grows quickly. So savant syndrome is a condition that is characterized by having an unusual at something such as art, math, or music, or remembering dates can be assigned as an overloaded seventh chakra. So if that person is impaired in other ways, it's typically their mind power is enhanced. So they made an example of Einstein and Howard Hughes, who have like brilliant minds, and that they are so genius that they are saddled with obsessive compulsive disorder and other problems that make it extremely difficult for them to have a normal life. So if you see someone who has an obsessive compulsive disorder, it's probably likely they have an overloaded chakra, overloaded crown chakra, and they are operating on such a high vibration. People with overloaded seven chakras also have an overactive nervous system and can suffer from seizures or nervous breakdowns. Because they often lose touch with their bodies, people with overloaded seven chakras may have poor hygiene and physical problems related to physical neglect or health problems related to that. But also overloaded psychological crown chakra, you might have too much energy in that chakra. You tend to be focused on your mind more than you focus on your body, and that's where you will have the neglect, the physical neglect, because you focus more on your mind. I found myself in that place at one time where I was so unrooted that I was focusing more on my meditations, that I was neglecting my physical self, and not saying neglecting and not working with hygiene, but not paying attention to certain physical things that were going on. Like if I was breaking out in acne for whatever reason, wasn't paying attention to what I was eating because I was so absorbed in my mental work that my physical work wasn't being paid attention to the way my mind work was being paid attention to. And sometimes we can lose a sense of grounding because we are so up there spiritually that we tend to forget the world. I remember when I first started meditating, I was so captivated with my travel and with my energy just being in different places that I didn't even leave my house. And there was one time where I was working from home, but I would spend the whole entire day in the house in total silence. I wouldn't even be speaking. My mind would be going, but I wouldn't be speaking. I would have total silence, and I would just be either I would be writing and journaling, or I would be meditating in front of my altar. And there was times that I would spend 3 straight hours in meditation and not want to come out. And it just got crazy for me. And it was like I wasn't functioning and taking care of my business. I wasn't doing anything but connecting to a higher power. And that was insane. And I had to snap out of it. And I don't remember what I did, but I had to snap out of it. So as I mentioned, an overloaded seventh chakra, people tend to be addicted, like I mentioned just now, to spiritual intellectual practices like prayer or meditation or constant studying. And that's what I was doing. I was getting every book related to my journey. I was getting as much information as I needed to satisfy me. And it was almost like it was feeding me, because there would be days where I wouldn't even eat. That's how bad it was. I would stay and I would just over-intellectualize something. And so that is a common problem for overloaded chakra and not feeling grounded. Definitely wasn't grounded. And although we are all spiritual beings having a human experience on this earth, it is important to remember that we are also living in the physical plane, which is earth, which our earthly bodies need to be paid attention to. And so rather than constantly focusing on exclusively the spiritual world, we need to concentrate on our earthly selves too, and this is where we have that balance. So I'm going to read to you about domestication as I mentioned it from the Four Agreements, okay? And I'm just going to read it from the book. During our early life, we began making agreements. Our parents rewarded us when we did things that they wanted, and they punished us when we did things that they didn't. We also learned behaviors and habits in school, church, or from other adults and children that were around us. The tools of the reward and punishment were often emotional and sometimes physical. The impact of others' opinions and reactions to us became very strong, a strong force in the habits that we created. In this process, we created agreements in our mind of who we should be, what we shouldn't be, who we were, and who we were not. Over time, we had learned to live our lives based on these agreements in our own mind. I'm going to say that again. Over time, we had learned to live our life based on the agreements in our own mind. We had learned to live according to the agreements that came from the opinion of others. In this process of domestication, it turns out that the choices that we make And the life that we live is more driven by other people's opinions and what we learn from others than our own sense of self. And with that, I'm going to open up the lines, and that's going to be the first question I'm going to ask is, do you feel that most people are operating on the basis of their true self or of the opinions of other people? So I'm going to open up the caller with the last four digits of 9147. Welcome. 9147, you are on the line. Welcome. Hello, 9147, going once. Okay. Caller with the last four digits of 6935, welcome. 6935. Okay.
Hello.
Yes, hello, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I had my phone on mute.
No, it's okay. I'm sure most people probably do. That's going to kind of give you a little time to come in. Welcome.
Okay. Hi, thank you. Could you repeat the question?
Yes.
You said, do we think most people operate from their true self?
I'm sorry. I thought you said you had a question. You want me to repeat the question?
Yes,
do you think that most people operate on the basis of others' opinions and ideas of them than their true self?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you were saying before, in growing up and being a child, you know, you do behave how others would, you know, what you get rewarded for. If somebody says that's a good job or, you know, they praise you in some kind of way, then you are inclined, I feel like, unless you have time to connect to your true self to do, you know, to please others in a sense. And I have a 2-year and a 3-year. I don't know if you can hear them talking, but, you know, that's pretty much how they operate. If I say it's a good job, you know, they do it again or they're happy about it versus if I, like, tell them no, you know, that's bad. So definitely.
Yeah. So do you think that's a bad thing that we teach our kids? Because I know when my kids was little, if they did something good, I was like, oh, my God, that was so great. And if they did something bad, it was like, well, why did you do that? So do you think it's a bad thing or do you think it's a part of learning?
I think it's both. I think, you know, when kids are a certain age, we have to, you know, be more in control of what they do, you know, because we're responsible for them and we have to teach them, you know, essentially right from wrong. But at the same time, like you were saying, everybody has learned what's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe originally, you know, maybe people were meditating and figuring out, you know, what was correct and what was incorrect. But now being the we're in this technology society, I don't think we meditate as much as we should. So it's kind of like a lot of people may just do things that others do because, you know, that's just what people do instead of thinking about it for themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I feel like we do actually care about what our kids do. So we do meditate on what we teach them, even if, you know, we couple things that we've learned in society with our own style, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we do meditate on whatever we expose our kids to on some level.
I agree with that. I agree. I think also we develop our sense of self through others' emotions and how they feel about us too, not just what we're taught, but what they feel. So if we see that someone is disappointed, we kind of want to cater ourselves around that. You know, if we see emotionally that's typically in children, if you see a parent is disappointed in something that you did, you try to go out your way in order to correct that situation so that you can see emotionally the difference as well. So it is, and you hear a lot of people say, oh, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. I don't care what anybody feels. But internally, yes, you do, because it affects your very being. And even though you may, you know, say I'm going to brush it off, like if someone told me that I was ugly and I truly believed it and I agreed with it, then I'm going to sit there and second-guess everything that pertains to that. And that means I have already accepted someone's emotion about me because apparently they attacked me because there was something going on in them, you know. And so we don't relate to that. But it's very powerful how that works, how much we absorb and how much we say on an unconscious level that we already agree with it before, you know, we've even processed it. Sometimes we don't even process it fully and we've already decided we agree with it innately. You know, and then we're fighting with ourselves to disagree with it. You know, so it's true. But do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, I heard about this experiment, but I don't know the name of it. Someone was telling me about it. It was like an experiment set up by some type of organization, and it was like five people who were working with the organization, and one person who wasn't. And, like, the people kept doing weird things, like standing up and sitting down. And the lady, like, you know, they just kept adding anonymous people who didn't know about it. And it's like they just kept, they didn't know why they were doing it, but they kept just getting up and sitting down, you know. And it was going on for about 5 minutes. And then they revealed that it was an experiment. And, you know, they were asking everybody, so why did you do this? X, Y, and Z, and nobody really knew. They just said they were doing it because the other person was doing it.
Yeah.
So I think, I'm sorry
about that. I said it was the power, it's the power of influence.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like a lot of times we don't even know why we do something, we just do it. And it would be one thing if we were following people who were, you know, connected with themselves, but most people aren't, you know.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's just like the blind leading the blind.
That's
all.
Continuous cycle. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing, sister, and thank you so much for listening in. Stay on the call.
Thank
I'm going to open up
some
calls. Always. Right. Hi, you guys. I love the little people. All right. So I'm going to go to another caller. I'm going to put you on hold. Call up with the last four digits of 1331. Welcome. 1331. Your line is open. Okay. Oh, they hung up. Okay. That wasn't cool. Okay, call up with the last four digits of 9808. Welcome. 9808. Your line is open. Okay. If you're not wishing to speak, please press 1 to take yourself out of queue, or you can try me online and listen online, and you won't get caught out there with the dead air. So if you prefer to listen as opposed to speak, please listen to me online. This line is open for those who are want the opportunity to speak or ask questions, so we don't want to leave the air with dead air when I open the line. So please check your phones, make sure that you're not on mute, and if you're wanting to speak, you can get that opportunity when I call your line. So please remember your last four digits. That will help. I'm going to open up the lines with the last four digits of 7189. Welcome.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me? Yes,
hello?
Great work you're doing. Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, now I can hear you. Thank you.
I admit, I think I missed the first call and a little bit of this one. But
oh, okay.
I already know quite a bit about the chakras, but I was wondering if you would be talking about maybe in later classes about the effects of, you know, the Kundalini energy and, you know, tying that in with the chakras and stuff like that.
I actually talked about that briefly in the other episodes. Every week I've been coming back with the chakras. So I initially started with the root chakra, on one show, and then the following shows I've worked with each chakra. So this particular week I'm continuing the crown chakra because there's so much information attached to that. But I did talk about, in brief, the kundalini as a fork on each chakra. I will be doing
okay.
a show next week speaking exclusively on the kundalini energies as well as the subtle body energies and how it relates to the chakras. But if you check out two shows before this one, where I talk about the third eye, I do excellent reading on the kundalini and what it represents. So I do have these shows on archive, so you can always catch them back when you have the time and listen to
it.
I do that. But I am going to go more in depth. This was just a session where we were doing week by week, we were touching on each chakra so that everyone could get like a vast amount of information and then do whatever research they want to do on the outside in the likes of furthering that the basis or the basic information that I'm sharing. But
right.
I will be
great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, I'm glad you joined and thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Right. I'm going to open up the caller with the last four digits of 1713. Welcome, Sister Poetress. How are you? Hello?
Hi, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm used to the mute button.
yeah, I had to go back to it. I'm fine. Thank you.
All right. So my question is, as I mentioned earlier, do you think that most people operate from the basis of other people's perception of them, or do they operate on their true self, from their true self, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I don't think they operate on their true self.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see a lot of people, I deal with a lot of people, including people in my own family that care about what other people think of them.
Mm-hmm.
Even for me sometimes, I kind of, like, wonder, I mean, you know, I kind of do things what other people might think. Like, you know, when we do our challenges in our other classes, I feel like I got to look all pretty and put my hair up and put on something nice and put myself in a position where I don't look all chunky so people don't think, oh, it'll be ugly, you know. So I even go to that drama sometimes. But, for me, I'm trying to wean myself out of it. But I think a lot of people, you know, do it, especially when it comes to, like, fashion statements and, you know, what they have, you know, as far as materialistic things are concerned. So, yeah, I think for the most part, people do things, you know, for other people, you know, to be what I'm looking for, to be acceptance by other people. That's not exactly what I was looking for, but, yeah.
No, but that's actually really, really dead on, because I think it's really about acceptance. I think people want to be accepted and they want to be loved, and they feel like in order for someone to love them that you have to align your likenesses. You have to become what they love in order for them to love you. And sometimes people put those restrictions on other people. You know, sometimes, in especially in relationships, I hear certain things like some brothers and sisters say, or for instance, in my particular case, because I am a woman, I've heard brothers say that if she wears her hair natural, that he thinks it's ugly and he don't want to deal with it. You know, he wants her to wear a relaxer in her hair. And I actually dated someone who told me that because I wore my hair natural that I looked like a slave. And I thought that was so crazy. And he expected me to go and get my hair relaxed because he felt that I looked like a slave, and I was just like, well, that's your problem. And see, we have, in a society, we have these kind of opinions that people throw on people that make them adjust their lives for it in order to validate themselves or be validated with that person or for that person to love them. And for me, it was like, if you don't like me and my nappy hair, then you can go in the other direction, because I'm not going to change my appearance because you have an issue with yourself and your ancestry as opposed to what I look like. Because really, that's what it was about. It wasn't about me as a person. It was about his look and his outlook on what he believed about his people and how he didn't love his culture and his history enough to appreciate the differences in what we can look like in our natural hair. So I didn't own that, and I specifically didn't own that, but there was other situations where I owned it. Like, for instance, if I was overweight, and I was dealing with someone who was like, you know, you're getting kind of sick, and, you know, and then that's when you go into yourself and you start looking and you're like, well, damn, I am getting kind of fat, you know, and instead of saying, you know what, I like how thick I am, but I could adjust my diet a little bit. You know what I mean? And there's a compromise mm-hmm. in that, because everything that someone says to you, especially when it's women and it comes to weight and that kind of thing, it is going to affect you. It is going to absorb into you, because we're sensitive about things like that. You can't tell a woman that she's getting fat and she's all right with that. You know, it's very rare that you're going to find that, you know. And so some things we will absorb and some things we have to learn how to bounce off of us. But it is very difficult, and especially because we learn this as children. We learn that acceptance is in praise, and that's the hard part to break away from. Because even as parents, we still teach our kids that. You know, when they graduate from school, we give them a reward. We give them a gift. When a birthday comes or when they do something good in school, we take them out. We treat them. But then when they do something negative, they get on punishment or they get things taken away from them. And it's hard to say, well, you know what, I'm not going to punish my kid because I don't want them to grow up with the perception of that when they do something bad, that they're always going to get in trouble. Well, they need to learn that in society, that this is what's happening. You know, so they have to learn, you know, a certain place where law and order has to happen. You know, so how do we do that without domesticating their minds into our beliefs and allowing them to have their own beliefs? So that's the hard part. That is the tough part. So do you have any questions or anything else you want to share?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the hair, because I used to date mm-hmm. my daughter's father because I've been a natural since I was 19, so that's been a long time. But, you know, I remember him telling me, you know, I would like to see you with a perm. And, you know, even though I was dead set against it, I put a perm in my hair. And I tell you, I didn't know how to take care of that perm. It bothered the S-H-I-T out of me. And it started making my hair fall out. After 2 weeks, I cut it off, and I told him, like, you know, if you don't accept me for my hair, I'm told I'm never going to do it again, so you're going to have to accept it. And I never did it again. You know? And as far as my weight is concerned, like, I don't get offended if people, you know, say something about my weight, because, you know, I look for honesty, you know, because I already know the things that I have to change for myself. Like, I had a guy, I asked someone one day, you know, did you ever think that I was too big? And he honestly told me that I was almost on the borderline of being overweight. And, you know, I did ask him. And I did not get insulted by it, because I even agree with it, and I was already working on my body for myself. But, you know, I don't get offended by the weight if anybody complains about my weight. I guess it's just more like, you know, being in front of the camera, that's when I start to get paranoid about it, because I don't want to look like I have, like, lots of necks and, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I get paranoid about it. But, you know, like I said, I'm working on myself to, you know, not care what anybody thinks.
Right.
It'll be a journey.
I think it's a way that people say it that makes it easier to digest, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of seeing an opinion on someone and saying, you know what, you need to do this. I think it's an easy way of saying, you know what, you look good, but I could imagine, you know, you in this beautiful dress, and I want to be able to get it for you. Let's work out together so we can get ourselves down to health. Because I talked about this on another show, and it's a matter of how you do it. If you say someone looks fat and they look sloppy, they're going to receive it wrong. But if you say, you know what, let's work out together, you know, it's the kind of thing you say, oh, okay, and then it works that way. You know what I mean? than to tell somebody that they're overweight. But I understand what you mean when you say you already was in a place of deciding that you were going to lose weight. So what somebody said to you in reference to your weight didn't bother you as much because you already knew what it is that you needed to do for yourself. And that's the beautiful thing about not taking ownership of someone else's, because you already have ownership of what you, or you have accountability for what you already know that you want to do for yourself. And I think that's a positive outlook on not taking things personally, you know. And we all need to learn how to do that because it's very difficult. We get emotionally attached to everything. And when someone says something, we'd be ready to fly off the handle and not really understand the true context of where it's coming from. Because, like I said, it could be more about them than it is about anybody else. So that's the one thing that we need to learn. When I do this book read, it's going to be very powerful, especially for those who don't know anything about the Four Agreements, because there's a lot of virtues and things in there that will start ringing off the aha light in the head, because when I read it, it was just like, wow, this is how I have to learn how to distance myself from certain things or learn how to reprogram my mind from being so sensitive to what people say. You know, this will also help people who are empaths. If you're an empath, you'll start to learn how to fine-tune your empathic abilities based on what you agree and what you decide not to agree with. So that's a powerful tool we can use. But thank you so much for calling in, Poetress. I always appreciate it when you call and you support. You're like one of my biggest supporters, and I appreciate you so much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
All right. We're going to go back to the reading, and we're going to talk a little bit more about our crown chakra, as we only have several minutes, because, again, I'm going to delegate the show to a little over an hour. But I do want to talk about just healing and working with an overloaded crown chakra. There are some things that we can do that we can start to alleviate some of the overages that's going on in our chakras, as well as our blockages. And as I mentioned last week, there are different types of herbs and spices that you can utilize in order to open up your crown chakra. Again, I'm going to read them off. I know there are people who are taking notes in relation to this, so we're going to discuss them again. So for the herbs that you want to use, herbs and spices that you want to use, because what they can do is energize and heal your imbalances in your crown chakra, and they are beneficial for the mind and the body. And this is one that I drink every single day. It is called Gotu Kola, and it is G-O-T-U, and then the other word is Kola, K-O-L-A. It is a very powerful mind stimulant. It is said to assist people who are working or who have dementia, who have memory loss, such as Alzheimer's disease. So it is a very good herb in order to give you clarity and to improve your brain function. I realized that I have begun, when I started drinking this Gotu Kola, I have been able to remember numbers again, because before I could not remember my own phone number, much less somebody who is important to me. And so many of us, if our phone shuts down, we wouldn't even know how to contact certain family members, and we wouldn't probably even know what our own phone numbers are. And so I've started drinking Gotu Kola every single day. You can go to, and you can order it through Mountain Rose Herbs, and you can Google that, or Mountain Rose Herbs, I believe it is. And you can order herbs from there, and they will give you the natural herbs, and you can make your own tea. I drink it every day as a tea in the morning. It definitely helps give you clarity, definitely does. Lavender is very good, and you can light lavender oil in your home. Sometimes it will, for some people, it will cause you to fall asleep, but it also gives you mind clarity. And then a lotus oil, okay? And then for just with the foods and things that you want to be able to eat. It says to eat any violet or purple or white color foods. So as I mentioned before in third eye chakra, I talked about eating more of the purple. It's actually called red cabbage, but it looks purple. Eating more of that. You want to eat eggplant, which is very, very good for you. You want to eat some cauliflower, which is also great. But any foods that are considered holistically healing or sacred have spiritual cleansings and benefits for your energy. The one thing I do want to mention to you, when I was doing fasting, and this is how important fasting is, when you fast, you are cleansing and detoxing your body of agents in your body that can compromise your mind, you'll compromise your spirit and your physical, especially if you're not eating a diet that is full of vegetables and things like that, if you're eating processed foods. And that means, and when I say processed foods, I also mean those things that are called meatless meat. Meatless meat is a processed food. That is something that is created from a tofu and some other chemical substances that make it taste like meat, but it isn't. Just like they have the chickenless chicken or whatever. Those things are processed foods. So I know people who call themselves vegetarians but eat these processed foods, and you are a vegetarian if you don't eat meat, period. But when you're eating processed foods as opposed to natural food sources, you're still breaking down the body. You are still, anything that is microwavable is definitely breaking down the body, because the radioactive waves and microwaves and microwavable food go directly into your body, and it is not healthy. So when you talk about fasting, and when you're fasting, and I'm not saying do fasting every day, like I'm doing a 3-day fasting, which is a cleanse and detox meditation and connecting to my higher self. And what that does, and I had done a 21-day fast, and it was on just liquids at that time because that was my first time doing a major fast. But with that fast, by the second week, my body was getting symptoms of being ill because it was detoxifying itself from all the junk that I was putting in it prior to it. The first week, my body was like, okay, all right, this is something new. The second week, my body was like, what the hell? And it was in crisis mode. By the third week, I started to be so clear and so focused. And this was around the time where I was meditating so much that I was in the house meditating. But I was so clear and so focused. My intuition was so on, and I was so in tune to listening to it. And when you do fasting, you're clearing yourself of all these energies of the earth, and you're connecting directly. It's almost like a direct connection to a higher power. It's a direct connection to an open crown chakra. It is an open connection from your third eye chakra, your sixth chakra, and all your chakras, if you're doing chakra work, are becoming aligned and shifted. And when you have an open crown chakra and you align chakras, not only do you achieve the kundalini, but you also achieve celestial messages. You achieve, you can be able to manifest so clearly and so vivid, and you can hear things clearly and vivid of what you're supposed to do. This is when my purpose began to develop, when I started to do fasting, and I used to do fasting Friday, where I would fast for 24 hours on a Friday and drink only lemon water and put ginger in it on occasion. And my clarity for that day and throughout that weekend was amazing. I didn't have things that I needed to eliminate out of my system via digestion because I was fasting. And so you don't have that buildup. You don't have that mind fog. You don't have that sluggishness. You don't have that distraction when you are fasting. So now you have a clear antenna to your divine self. And the more you do it, the more you're able to connect. And so I'm not advocating for people to fast and do days of fasting. Do one day of fasting or do 2 days. For me, the first time I did it, I had to do 1 day and then gradually up to 2 days. Them 2 days was the most clear that I have ever been. And it's nice to sometimes take ourselves away from the fog of everything that goes on and be in clear connection with our divine self. It's so essential. And so, you know, I mention it because the crown chakra, our connection with our crown chakra is so powerful to who we are and discovering our purpose. So with that, I'm going to end the show. I'm going to open up the lines just really quick to grab some more questions, and then we're going to start the process of ending the show. Next week, we're going to talk more about subtle bodies. I'm going to talk about the energy field around our bodies and how our chakra creates our aura around us. And we're going to talk, we're going to do one show specifically catered to the Kundalini. What I may decide to do is do 1 hour of Kundalini and the other hour of subtle bodies. But because the subtle bodies take a lot, I'll have to determine how that works out. And just stay tuned to the event page to see exactly what's going to go down. But I'm going to open up caller with the last 4 digits of 9147. Do you have any questions or any comments that you'd like to share? 9147. Okay. Caller with the last 4 digits, 9808. Do you have any questions or any comments that you'd like to add? Okay. Caller with the last 4 digits of 7189. Do you have any questions or any comments you'd like to add? Okay.
Oh, again.
Yes. I'm going through the line to see if anybody has anything they want to add before we go. Okay. Caller with the last 4 digits. 1337. Welcome.
Hello.
1337. Okay. Okay, caller with the last 4 digits, 3206. Do you have any questions or any comments you'd like to add?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, beautiful?
I am doing well, thank you. Actually, tonight I joined kind of late, so I just want to say once again thank you for what you do, and I'm sure I'm not the only one learning so much. So thank you for the time, for your time, you know, and doing this for us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I love being able to share this information. It's so vital because so many people have questions and they don't know where to start when they begin their healing. And sometimes just learning about the basic things can open the doors for other things to happen. So I'm grateful to be able to do it and share the information. And I'm just one source. There's so many other sources for this information that is beyond what I'm teaching here or sharing here. So I always encourage people to go beyond just me.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining. And join me next week. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Kundalini and more of the chakras and aura. Caller with the last 4 digits of 6935, welcome. Do you have any questions or anything you'd like to ask?
Hi. Yes, I do, but I don't know if you have time. It was just, when you started talking about relationships, my phone actually hung up. But I was always curious about why women seem to have a better intuition, you know, and I guess why we do or don't trust it. But I can inbox you or something because I know you have to go.
Oh, that's okay. We can talk for a little bit more. I think the reason why women do tend to hone into their intuition a little bit more because we're more emotional and sensitive creatures, because of the fact that we are creators of life, I think it just And it's not to say that men don't tune into it. I think because we're so in tune to so many other things within ourselves, especially our emotional bodies and our emotional selves and how we love and give love. And I think that a lot of times when we don't listen to our intuition, it's because we're not connected to ourselves completely. You know, I think that especially when we talk about the third eye chakra, when we talk about the sixth chakra, I speak very avidly about intuition and how having a sixth chakra blockage could definitely contribute to the fact that we don't listen to our intuition. We always second guess, you know, and I found myself in a place of doing that earlier this week. Like, my intuition was telling me something that was right on, but because I didn't trust myself in knowing that that information is solid, I second guessed it, you know. And other times we second guess it when we think we're crazy. So we're like, nah, that's not. And we second guess it. So we have to start to trust ourselves and knowing that the information that we get innately is the absolute God in us communicating to us. It's hard because once you get in the habit of being told that your thoughts are not, you know, especially if you grow up in a spiritual aspect and you go to church and you go by a certain religion, they're taught that you were created in this world of sin. So out the gate, you're being told that there's something wrong with you, that everything that you do is going to be incorrect with God. So and the only way that you're going to be correct is if you live the way God wants you to live. And so we ask ourselves, well, what way is that? You know, and what way is considered what man believes that on their full perception as opposed to their own individual perception. It's like someone took their perception of what they think God is and they put it in a book and said, this is what you're supposed to do, these are the rules, and that's that. And nobody is supposed to question it. Nobody is supposed to say, wait a minute, but that doesn't apply to me because my experience is this. You know, so what happens is we all live by that perception. So when we get to a point in our lives where we start to question that, and as I mentioned last week, I used the metaphor of eating grits, okay? You were raised in a house where all y'all ate was grits. And nobody was allowed to eat anything but grits. That's all you were given. And so when you got older, because when you live with your parents, they're your support system, they're your social life. When you're little, that's your social life. When you're 2 and 3 years old, you don't have a social life. Your parents are your social life. So when they teach you that this is all, you can only have grits, this is all you're supposed to have. And then you go to school and you go out and everybody else is having eggs and pancakes and you still eating grits and you're like, wait a minute. Well, I want some of that. I got to eat the grits. It's the same thing when the people start, when folks start having a spiritual awakening. And when they go to church all these many years and then they're like, well, what is God? Well, what is the Bible, and why is the Bible? Is the Bible true? Who is Jesus? And you start having these questions that now all of a sudden you discover this is not only the only thing that's there. Okay, yeah, there's grits and there's eggs and pancakes. There's not just grits by itself. Now I need to find out what eggs and pancakes are about. So that's when we start to abandon our origins of where we begin, and we start to venture out and look into other religious beliefs or other spiritual connections to support our questions about what is really real. And in total essence, it's you asking your divine self, who am I and what is my purpose? This is when we start to open up that crown chakra and we start to affiliate ourselves with the world and not just that particular instance of having no grit, so to speak. You understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, definitely.
So it kind of teaches us to have our opinions. When we are in our parents' household and we're learning based on what they've learned, our opinions are not our own. Our opinions are formulated through their influence, you know. And so we develop ourselves around their influence. And it's not until when our children or when we become teenagers, we start to rebel. And this is where the rebellion comes in. And when you have a teenager that is doing everything outside of what their parents told them because now they're experiencing the world away from their parents a little bit more. So now they're more exposed to other things. You know, they're developing a social life and their friends and they start to do
what their friends are doing, because now they're breaking away from that common place with that social environment at home, because now your social environment is more out there, and now you're absorbing more. Now you're starting to question what your parents taught you, because now you're like, wait a minute, you know, there's more, there's other stuff, and then you start to break away slowly, you know, and so that's how we get caught up in not listening to our intuition, because whatever has been branded in us hasn't totally left us. Because we still have some of the roots of what our parents gave us, that foundation. Mm-hmm. We will always have that foundation. But we have to decide that if that foundation is what supports our current life, does it support what I do right now? Does it support what I want to do right now? Or is it just the foundation to open the gate to another foundation that I can create for myself? You know, so we're living under someone else's illusion. And when we start to break out of that illusion, we start to create our own illusion. You know, so that's how we lose the sense and sensibility of listening to our intuition, when we're still operating from that other foundation and not operating from the essential self of who we are and trusting ourselves, trusting that what we've experienced and what we know is what we need and what the universe is going to continue to supply for us. Our parents can no longer supply it to us when we're adults. The universe will supply it for us. And we have to trust that, and it's hard to do that. You know? So I hope that makes sense.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for joining this evening. We're going to wrap it up, and we're going to come back next week. And hopefully I'm going to have some fun trivia next week just based on the chakras and what everybody has learned. So maybe we'll do something fun this week, make it a little bit more exciting. I want to thank you all for joining me. I do want to give you a lineup of some of the other shows and events that I will be doing this week. I will be joining with my Elevation Radio family tomorrow on the King Me Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we're going to talk about Facebook relationships. What does Facebook, or how does Facebook affect our relationships? It's going to be an interesting and fun show, so please join us at blogtalkradio.com/elevationradio, and I will post it to the page so you guys can join us. We would love to have you guys on and listening. My sister is doing a show on Saturday morning, the Queen Me Show, which is at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the same Elevation station, and I will post information for that. It's going to be an interesting show about just our sexuality and how it relates to the different deities and goddess and goddesses that are in relation to that. So that's going to be an interesting show as well. We also have our Monday evenings, Happy Hour with the Crew, with our brother T-Hawk, who is the bartender, and he will be serving drinks as we serve up conversation from behind the bar. It's unexpected, so you never know what the conversation is going to be about, but it is always interesting and engaging. So join us at the same Elevation station. And then on Tuesday evenings, we have our Getting It In show, where there's hard-hitting topics that affect our community, where we're going to have my brother Nasir, my sister Liz, my brother T-Hawk, and my brother Amir, where they do a lot of dialoguing around the round table on today's issues and events that affect us. And then we have a new show that is on Wednesdays, and all these shows begin at 10 p.m. with the exception of Saturday, which is at 12 p.m. But on Wednesday we have a new show called Reservation for the Revolution, and that's going to be with my sister Latiqua and my sister Sun Ra, where they will be discussing plans and ideas surrounding on our revolution as melanated people. How are we going to begin to fight this revolution, come together? They're going to have strategies and different ideas, as well as opportunities for employment or opportunities to begin your own businesses, but they have a vast amount of information to support and begin the revolution. So please join us again. It's at blogtalkradio.com/elevationradio. So please join us.
Again, I want to thank you all for joining me. And also, don't forget to check me out this coming Sunday as I continue the Overcoming the Angry Vagina book read by Queen Afua at 9 p.m. at the same station. So thank you so much, and have a good evening. Peace.
Thank you. Thank you.